So we're continuing with our festive Christmas edition, a week before Christmas for December the 18th. Many thanks to Liz and Kath, who've been with us for an hour, and we've had some fun and frolics. Now I'm joined by Jean, who's going to do us some poems, short stories, some literary stuff for Christmas. So over to you, and it's great to have you with us.
Well, I used to say good morning, but it's actually good afternoon now, people, because we're all running on overtime, I think, at the moment. Still, it's all very nice, and we've met each other, which we don't often see during the year. And here we are, it's nearly Christmas. Where's this year gone? So, let's have a few Christmassy things today. My first thing is a very simple little poem by Thomas Hardy. Now, people probably know him best for his memorable novels like Tess of the D'Urbervilles, and Far From the Madding Crowd, for example. But he was also a very prolific poem. And this one is called Snow in the Suburbs. Snow in the Suburbs by Thomas Hardy. Every branch big with it, bent every twig with it, every fork like a white web foot, every street and pavement mute. Some flakes have lost their way and grope back upwards when, meeting those meandering down, they turn and descend again. The palings are glued together like a wall, and there's no waft of wind with the fleecy fall. A sparrow enters the tree, whereupon immediately a snow lump thrice his own slight size descends on him and showers his head and eye, and overturns him, and near inurns him, and lights on a nether twig when its brush starts off a volley of other lumps with a rush. The steps are blanched slope, up which with feeble hope a black cat comes, wide-eyed and thin, and we take him in. Who could do anything else on a cold night? Now, my second poem is very short, but I really like this because it talks about the nativity scene, but looking at it from a very perspective angle than we usually do. And it's What the Donkey Saw by U.A. Fanthorpe, who I think is American. No room at the inn, of course, and not that much more in the stable. What with the shepherds, Mary, Magi, Joseph, the heavenly host, not to mention the baby using our manger as a cot. You couldn't have squeezed another cherubim for love nor money. Still, in spite of the overcrowding, I did my best to make them feel wanted. I could see the baby and I would be going places together. Very, very small, but very pertinent. Another wintry scene is by another person who we always think of more of as an author than a poet, and that is Robert Louis Stevenson's. And this poem by him is set some time ago, as you will recognise when you hear the words about it. Wintertime by Robert Louis Stevenson. Late lies the wintry sun abed, a frosty, fiery, sleepy head, blinks but an hour or two, and then a blood-red orange sets again. Before the stars have left the skies, at morning in the dark I rise, and shivering in my nakedness, by the cold candle bathe and dress. Close by the jolly fire I sit, to warm my frozen bones a bit, or with a reindeer sled explore the colder countries round the door. When to go out, my nurse doth wrap me in a comforter and cap. The cold wind burns my face and blows its frosty pepper up my nose. Black are my steps on silver sod. Thick blows my frosty breath abroad. A tree and house and hill and lake are frosted like a wedding cake. Right, now then, our next poem, which you've heard sometime in the past, is called A Politically Correct Poem, and it's a bit tongue-in-cheek, but I'm sure that you will recognise some of the things that he talks about as the way the world is going nowadays. It's called Christmas, A Politically Correct Christmas Poem. Humour matters. 'Twas the night before Christmas and Santa's a wreck. How to live in a world that's politically correct? His workers no longer would answer to elves. Vertically challenged, they were calling themselves. And labour conditions at the North Pole were alleged by the union to stifle the soul. Four reindeer had vanished without much propriety, released to the wilds by the Humane Society. And equal employment had made it quite clear that Santa had better not just use reindeer. So Dancer and Donner and Comet and Cupid were replaced with four pigs. And you know that looks stupid. The runners had been removed from his beautiful sleigh because the ruts were deemed dangerous by the EPA. And millions of people were calling the cops when they heard sledge noises upon their rooftops. Second-hand smoke from his pipe had his workers quite frightened, and his fur-trimmed red suit was called Unenlightened. To show thee the strangest of today's ebbs and flows, Rudolph was suing over unauthorised use of his nose. He went to Giraldo in front of the nation, demanding millions in overdue workers' compensation. So, half the reindeer were gone, and his wife, who suddenly said she'd had enough of this life, joined a self-help group and packed and left in a whiz, demanding from now on that her title was Ms. And as for gifts, why, he'd never had the notion that making a choice could cause such commotion. Nothing of leather, nothing of fur, which meant nothing for him or nothing for her. Nothing to aim, nothing to shoot, nothing that clamoured or made lots of noise. Nothing just for girls and nothing just for boys. Nothing that claimed to be gender specific, nothing that's warlike or non-pacifistic. No candy or sweets, they're bad for the tooth. Nothing that seems to embellish upon the truth. And fairy tales, while not yet forbidden, were like Ken and Barbie, best off hidden, for they raised the hackles of those psychologicals who claimed the only good gift was one ecological. No baseball, no football, someone might get hurt. Besides, playing sports exposed kids to dirt. Dolls were said to be sexist and should be passé, and Nintendo would rot your entire brain away. So Santa just stood there, dishevelled and perplexed. He just couldn't figure out what to do next. He tried to be merry, he tried to be gay, but you must admit he was having a very bad day. His sack was quite empty. It was flat on the ground. Nothing fully acceptable was anywhere to be found. Something special was needed, a gift that he might give to us all without angering the left or the right. A gift that would satisfy, with no indecision, each group of people in every religion. Every race, every hue, everyone, everywhere, even you. So here is that gift, its prize beyond worth. May you and your loved ones enjoy peace on earth. Well, that narrows you down to what you can buy. And chocolates will be so expensive next year, you will only be able to have one little square each. So they tell us on the news, because the cocoa crops are not doing what they should. Finally, we just could not say goodbye and Merry Christmas without our old favourite, A Visit from St. Nicholas by Clement Clark Moore. We've got to have this, haven't we? 'Twas the night before Christmas, when all through the house not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in the hope that St. Nicholas soon would be there. The children were nestled all snug in their beds, with visions of sugar plums dancing in their heads. And Mama in her kerchief and I in my cap had just settled our brains for a long winter nap. When out on the lawn there arose such a clatter, I sprang from my bed to see what was the matter. Away to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters and threw up the sash. The moon on the breasts of the new-fallen snow gave a lustre of midday to objects below. When what to my wondering eyes did appear but a miniature sleigh and 8 tiny reindeer. With a little old driver so lively and quick, I knew in a moment he must be Saint Nick. More rapid than eagles, his coursers they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name. Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer and Vixen, oh come on Comet, on Cupid, on Donner and Blitzen. To the top of the porch, to the top of the wall, now dash away, dash away, dash away all. As leaves that before the wild hurricane fly, when they meet with an obstacle mounted in the sky. So up to the housetops the cursers they flew, with a sleigh full of toys, and St. Nicholas too. And then in a twinkling I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little hoof. As I drew in my head and was turning around, down the chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound. He was dressed all in fur from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. A bundle of toys he flung on his back. He looked like a peddler just opening his pack. His eyes, how they twinkled, his dimples, how merry. His cheeks were like roses, his nose like a cherry. His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow, and the beard of his chin was as white as the snow. The stump of a pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke it encircled his head like a wreath. He had a broad face and a little round belly that shook when he laughed like a bowl full of jelly. He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf, and I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. A wink of his eye and a twist of his head soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work and filled all the stockings, then turned with a jerk, and laying his finger aside of his nose and giving a nod, up the chimney he rose. He sprang to his sleigh, to his team gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the downs of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim, ere he drove out of sight, "Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good night." Did you hear Santa Claus going then, Tim?
I did.
Well, there you are, you see, and you keep saying, you are, you keep saying. Anyway, folks, that's all from us, I think, for this year. The next time, I think we shall be in another new year, and let's hope it's a good one for the world and for us all. So have a happy Christmas. Bye for now.
So many thanks to Jean. And she'll be back with us in the new year. Keep listening. We've got a few more news stories, and I've got a few more facts about exciting Christmas things coming up. So keep listening.